This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. At a primetime news conference last night, Donald Trump announced his pick for the Supreme Court. If confirmed, Neil Gorsuch would take the seat left by the death of Antonin Scalia. Gorsuch is also a legal conservative. And here to bring us all the details of the announcement and talk about reaction is Time Warner Cable News Washington reporter Jeff Bennett. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hey, Frank, another busy week in Washington.
Another. Right? News is breaking all around you, and we'll get to some of the nomination stories that are breaking around you. But let's talk about Neil Gorsuch. Take a step back and tell us who he is.
Right. Well, Donald Trump said he wanted a judge in the Scalia mold, one who follows the Constitution as, you know, written by the nation's founders without imposing personal ideology. And he found it in he found that person in Neil Gorsuch. He's 49 years old. He's a well-established conservative, as you mentioned. He was appointed by former President George W. Bush to the Denver-based 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, on which he sits right now. He's been outspoken about the need for courts to have a limited role in American life, and he's criticized what, you know, he perceives to be the overreach of federal agencies. What's also interesting about him is that he's a former classmate of former President Obama at Harvard Law, and he's really known for his writing style. I mean, he takes what could be cut and dry legal opinions, and he really kind of elevates them to the level of nonfiction. Scalia, too, was also known for his writing style. So if people hear a lot of comparisons made between Gorsuch and Scalia, it's for those two reasons, the way he writes and also the way he thinks, his judicial philosophy.
And Trump got his short list of Supreme Court nominees rubber stamped by conservative groups. Who else was on that list?
Well, that's really interesting because, you know, last night the president said that this was the most transparent nomination process ever. And that's true because he took the unusual step of releasing a list of all the people that he would pull from to nominate to the court. Now, he outsourced the creation of that list to the ultra-conservative Heritage Foundation and the Conservative Federalist Society. That was his way of sending a signal to the conservative base that, you know, he's on board and that if he was going to appoint anybody to the bench, it would be a surefire conservative. But one of the other people, the other person on the short list was Thomas Hardiman. He is different because he has a blue-collar background. Unlike the other justices currently on the bench, he didn't go to Harvard or Yale. He went to Notre Dame, and he, you know, paid his way through college. I believe his parents ran a taxi cab company. So his personal background had a lot in common with the folks generally that, you know, elevated Trump to the White House. And so the president, his entire administration, frankly, tried to build this level of suspense. There might have been some disinformation put out by Trump aides to suggest that both Hardiman and Gorsuch were here in Washington yesterday. We don't necessarily believe that to be the case anymore. But there was sort of this like apprentice-style moment last night where Trump walked to the podium alone. Typically, a president comes out with a nominee. But he walked to the podium alone and then brought Gorsuch out and then even asked the crowd, you know, so was it a surprise? Were you surprised? But I have to tell you, you know, conservative judicial activists hate suspense when it comes to Republican Supreme Court nominees because they've been burned so many times before in the past.
Well, tell us about some of the outstanding rulings or the standout rulings, I should say, that Gorsuch has made in the past that sort of brought him to the attention of conservatives.
Well, he's known for his opinions on religious liberty, including supporting the right of companies to deny contraception in their health care plans. That's the big Hobby Lobby case, and he voted with a majority of the Tenth Circuit in favor of allowing companies to deny contraceptive coverage. And he wrote in that opinion about the family that owns Hobby Lobby. He wrote, as they understand it, ordering the companies to provide insurance coverage for drugs or devices whose use is inconsistent with their faith itself violates their faith. He says, no doubt the Greens own Hobby Lobby, no doubt the Greens' religious convictions are contestable. Some might even find them offensive, but no one disputes that they are sincerely held religious beliefs. And so the big issue that a lot of, you know, progressives are concerned about is the issue of abortion and whether or not Gorsuch or any other Trump appointee would either, you know, weaken or overturn Roe v. Wade. But it appears that abortion rights are secure for now, so long as Justice Kennedy continues to support sort of the broad outlines of the right to abortion established in Roe v. Wade. The addition of Gorsuch isn't likely to change it. What could change it is when President Trump gets to appoint another justice, and that's why you have Senate Democrats now trying to figure out what their strategy is going to be for Gorsuch, because right now, it's a, you know, Trump is replacing a conservative with a conservative, but when he replaces a conservative with a liberal, then that's a, you know, a whole other fight.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that strategy, because as you say, the Democrats are in a slightly difficult position. On the one hand, you're replacing a Scalia with a Scalia, by all accounts, ideologically pretty close. So there's not much change there. And also, he's a candidate with sterling credentials, at least in jurisprudence, right? So it'd be hard to knock those, at least from what we've seen so far. So do the Democrats, as some have already announced, that they would, you know, sort of launch a filibuster? That was before the announcement was made. Do they go ahead with that? What are their choices?
Well, you know, it's funny. The Democratic base will not allow this to go without a fight, because the Democrats, by and large, feel like this seat, this nomination was stolen from them, because you remember the Republicans effectively blocked former President Obama's nominee of Merrick Garland. We should say, by the way, that Gorsuch's first phone call last night after he was nominated was to Merrick Garland as a sign of respect. But, you know, Republicans feel like this seat was stolen from them, or rather, Democrats feel like Republicans stole this seat from them. The question now is, if Democrats decide to obstruct this confirmation process, Republicans could take the so-called nuclear option and reduce the threshold for clearing what's called a filibuster. I'm kind of getting into the weeds here, but you're talking about Senate rules. But the Senate Republicans could basically lower the threshold from 60 votes needed to clear a Supreme Court nominee to 51. It's called a simple majority. Republicans have 52 seats. So if they do that, then, you know, Gorsuch just walks on into the Supreme Court. So right now, Donald Trump needs 8 Democrats to side with him to get Gorsuch through the standard process. So today, President Trump was at the White House, and reporters asked him, should Republicans take this nuclear option if Democrats contest it? And he said, yeah, they should. So the idea is that some Democrats believe they should just hold their political ammunition for a time when President Trump has to replace a liberal justice and let this one slide. But, you know, as we know, based on the two major marches we've seen here, and so, you know, consecutive weeks, hundreds of thousands of people, the Democratic base probably is not willing to let this slide. And frankly, you know, as we've also seen, the one thing that Democrats learned firsthand in the Obama years is that there is no political cost for obstruction. Republicans, frankly, were rewarded for it. So this is the thing that the Democrats are going to have to figure out quickly.
All right. Well, what about the North Carolina delegation in terms of their reaction to this choice? Tell us how that broke down.
So Senator Tom Tillis on Twitter said that Judge Neil Gorsuch is an incredibly qualified and mainstream choice to serve on the Supreme Court. And then Richard Burr also tweeted, I'm hopeful that the Senate will come together and swiftly confirm Judge Gorsuch. So they are on board with the Republican line here. And Judge Gorsuch is on Capitol Hill today. His first meeting is with the Senate Majority Leader, McConnell. So this process is moving forward very quickly.
All right. And we talk about rules. This just in, and you may have been on the line with us, and not have even seen this news that's just in, but the Senate Finance Committee has suspended rules that would require Democrats to be present during a vote. So this is to advance the nominations for Treasury Secretary and Health and Human Services. So the rules say a Democrat has to be there in the committee in order to vote. And of course, we know that's held up some previous nominations this week. So the Rules Committee has changed the rule and said, no, you don't have to be. And apparently those nominations have gone through, which I guess gets us to this, what you were saying earlier. If we change the rules about filibuster, change the rules about in the committee process, we might see an overhaul of how Congress actually does business in this new Trump era, Jeff.
And that's right. And, you know, the Senate has a number of arcane rules that even seasoned political reporters don't know exist until someone decides to change a rule. And then it's, oh, I didn't know this rule existed. But the thing that's so interesting in this Trump era, as you put it, is that there are no more norms. So all the things that we thought we knew, we no longer know. And so in a lot of ways, what we're seeing is that the ends justify the means. I mean, if Democrats do decide to filibuster Gorsuch, it'll be the second time in modern history that the Senate has done it. I mean, Democrats, including former Senator or then Senator Barack Obama, tried to block the confirmation of Samuel Alito, and that didn't work. So if they do it again this time around, it'll only be for the second time. But, you know, it's a new era.
Well, but what may not change as quickly is what you do about professional political, not appointees, but professional bureaucrats, people who operate the government on a day-to-day basis and don't stand for elected office. Attorney General Sally Yates gets fired because she refused to defend the travel ban. We have nearly 1,000 State Department employees now signing a protest about the travel ban imposed this week by by Donald Trump. I guess the other question is whether Donald Trump, used to operating in a kind of corporate environment, will be able to manage this whole new way that things get done in Washington.
That's right. And after the roughly 900 State Department officials signed that dissent memo, Sean Spicer, the White House press secretary, was asked about it. And he said, you know, we're aware of the memo, but he warned career diplomats that they should, quote, either get with the program or they can go. The problem with that is that if those 900 career diplomats did go, there's no one to replace them with because there are not enough people in the Trump administration pipeline to put into these jobs. And that's not even accounting for the confirmation process. It's that during the transition, the Trump transition team was so far behind in getting a lot of these names lined up, mainly because they thought they wouldn't win, and also because Donald Trump himself, we understand, made the transition team focus more on the campaign and less on the actual work of the transition. But, you know, the question, the point you made about Sally Yates is also interesting because, you know, people on both sides said that she knew she was a short timer at the Justice Department. She knew she was on her way out, and that there were other ways for her to make the point to the president or even to the Trump administration. She could have mentioned it privately. But, you know, Justice or former Attorney General Eric Holder and people close to her said that, you know, that basically supported her decision to publicly break with this travel ban that he had imposed, and that they really, you know, thought that what she did was remarkable and something that they really, you know, gave her a lot of credit for.
We will stay tuned. Appreciative as always. Thank you so much, Jeff Bennett.
Sure. Take care.
Jeff Bennett, Time Warner Cable News, Washington reporter. Just ahead, writer and law professor Jed Purdy examines the Trump administration and resistance movements, and we'll talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.